It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
The World Health Organization predicts up to 10,000 new Ebola cases a week by early December. A UN official warns the global effort to combat Ebola are not enough. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The World Health Organization Tuesday predicted as many as 10,000 new cases of Ebola per week by early December. The UN agency provided grim new statistics showing more than 4,400 have died and confirmed cases are approaching 9,000. Assistant Director General Bruce Aylward said the mortality rate is about 70%. At Geneva news conference, he said he was detecting two troubling trends, the virus spreading to new areas of West Africa, while the capital cities of the hardest hit countries, Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia, reporting many more new cases.
In all capitals of all three countries, you're seeing different numbers of cases, different burden of cases, and we often talk about Monrovia, of course, and the huge number of cases that were being seen there. But then also in Freetown and Conakry, you have escalating case numbers.
The head of the UN Ebola mission in West Africa told the Security Council Tuesday he's worried that everything being done is not enough. Anthony Branbury said at least 70% of infected people must be in a care facility and most of the dead buried without further infection by mid-December.
With each passing day, as more people are infected, as the number of people infected grows exponentially, the absolute value of these targets grows rapidly, and those targets become more distant and more difficult to achieve. If we do not reach these targets within 60 days, and the numbers spike, many more people will die.
In Liberia Tuesday, the country's transport minister voluntarily isolated herself in her home after her driver died of Ebola. Liberian healthcare workers ended a two-day strike over hazard pay and improving working conditions. This is VOA News. In South Africa, the medical charity group Doctors Without Borders Tuesday announced 16 of its workers have been infected by Ebola and 9 have died. In Sierra Leone Tuesday, security forces clashed with Freetown residents protesting the government's slow response and removing a corpse of a suspected Ebola victim lying on a street. William Sal Lemon is a Freetown resident.
All of this one definitely can pose serious risk, and you are seeing the way the number is just increasing, more especially in Freetown. And Aberdeen is part of Freetown. Because of the late response of the Minister of Health officials, people are now getting contact with their family members who are suspected cases, dead cases. People are getting contact with their family members. And because of this, the case is seriously increasing in Freetown.
Meanwhile, a member of a Sierra Leonean army unit preparing for peacekeeping duties in Somalia has been diagnosed with Ebola. The contingent is being monitored and their deployment delayed. President Obama Tuesday called on the world to do more to fight the disease.
We have not only a humanitarian crisis in West Africa that threatens hundreds of thousands of lives, but we also have the secondary effects of destabilization economically and politically that could lead to more severe problems down the road. So everybody's going to have to do more than they're doing right now.
The head of the U.S. Agency for International Development announced the United States is sending another $142 million to West Africa to fight Ebola, including $65 million to Liberia. Elsewhere, a U.N. health worker infected with Ebola died in Germany. In Spain, a nurse infected while treating an elderly missionary who had died has improved slightly but remains in serious condition. A U.S. nurse infected with Ebola received a plasma transfusion from a missionary doctor who recovered from the disease. And the U.S. Centers for Disease Control said it will send rapid response teams to any hospital in the U.S. with patients that have a diagnosis of Ebola. Mozambicans today vote in elections widely expected to be carried by the ruling Frelimo Party, which has ruled since independence from Portugal in 1975. Its candidate is former defense minister Felipe Nyusi. He's being challenged by Renamo leader and former rebel chief Afonso Dhlakama, as well as Davies Simango and of the Mozambique Democratic Movement. This is the Southern African country's fifth election since the end of a civil war between Frelimo and Renamo in 1992. Burundi Tuesday said an investigation into dozens of floating bodies and bags discovered on Lake Ruweru in August were Rwandan, although Kigali has denied this. Both governments have come under criticism for stifling dissent, and Washington last month called for a thorough investigation of the incident. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, October 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberian health workers and a two-day strike, but the association's president said he's been threatened with arrest for inciting workers.
The strike is over, according to all the health workers of the Republic of Liberia. Our concern is the people of Liberia, and we do not want the people in Liberia to be at risk. We do not want Liberia people to die again.
Joseph Tamba is the president of the National Health Workers Association of Liberia. The head of the UN mission to fight Ebola says time is the enemy to get Ebola under control. UN peacekeepers are targeted in restive northern Mali, and the people of Mozambique go to the polls today to elect the president.
We have a lot of people without job, without work, so we need a special thing, we need the government, we need change.
Virgilio Umfumo is a businessman and an artist in Maputo. Flooding adds to the misery of South Sudan refugees, and are churches in Ghana too noisy or uplifting? Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberian health workers say they have ended their two-day-old strike called to demand higher pay for taking care of Ebola patients. Joseph Tamba, president of the National Health Workers Association of Liberia, says they ended the strike after receiving appeals from Liberians and the international community. Tamba, who says he's in hiding because the Internal Affairs Minister has ordered his arrest for inciting workers, said the health workers did not want to contribute further to the death of more Liberians.
The strike is over, according to all the health workers of the Republic of Liberia. Our concern is the people of Liberia. But listening to the speech of the minister yesterday, telling the people that he would never and never reinstate us, that means this is a wrong process. And we do not want the people in Liberia to be at risk. Because of this, all the health workers we met today, and we decided that we are going to call out the ghost over to sit down and listen to the international community to see how best they can come in to see how best to see the plight of the health workers and try to provide the incentive, the better incentive for the health workers of the Republic of Liberia. That's why we call out the ghost over today, because we do not want Liberian people to die again.
Are you ending the strike because you have been threatened with dismissal by the minister, or because you are concerned about the suffering of the Liberian people?
It is not because of the threat of the minister. No. The minister is a Liberian. We are Liberian. And he is not the wounded minister. He's never been the first minister, and he will never be the last minister. We know the minister's time will be finished. We are health workers. For two of our business, we cannot hold Liberian hostage, and the Liberian people must suffer. No. This is why we say we will cut out the ghost law. And not because of a threat.
Mr. Tamba, earlier I spoke with you, and you told me you are not in the capital, Monrovia. In fact, you were on the run. Why are you on the run?
Yes. I'm on the run because the international minister has given order to police to find me anywhere and arrest me. And I don't want to be arrested because I do not know the order they gave to the police. So I don't want to take away to this government. I'm afraid.
Why did the internal affairs minister give order to the police to arrest you? Why?
Yeah, because according to him, we are the one that is inciting the workers in Liberia, the health workers in Liberia. We the leadership. And that's why even the minister is saying, the minister said yesterday that they will never ever reinstate us. I don't know which one they call incitement, but we are there like a messenger. People call us and tell us, go and tell the government. And when we tell the government, then they say we are inciting the workers. So I don't know. I'm confused.
Now that the strike is over, will you be returning to the city, Monrovia?
I might not return until I can get a guarantee from the international community and also get a guarantee from the civil society, because I'm afraid.
I do want to thank you very much. It's so nice to talk with you.
Thank you. May God bless you. May God bless your hand. May God bless VOA. But I want you also to extend my message to the international community that they must come to my rescue, because certainly I'm not safe to the government of Liberia. They have classified me as Nehu inciting workers against the government.
Joseph Tamba is the president of the National Health Workers Association of Liberia. He was speaking with me from somewhere in central Liberia. We made several attempts to reach Internal Affairs Minister Maurice Dukley and Information Minister Louis Brown for comment. Both were unavailable. But another government official who did not want to be identified implied that VOA should not have granted Mr. Tamba an interview because he said Tamba is claiming persecution so as to get asylum abroad. The head of the UN mission to fight Ebola warned on Tuesday that the coming weeks will be critical in efforts to get the virus under control. From the United Nations viewers, Margaret Bashir reports, his words came as U.S. President Barack Obama urged the international community to do more to halt this global public health threat.
The head of the UN mission for Ebola emergency response, Anthony Banbury, told the UN Security Council he is deeply worried that all the pledges of personnel, material, and money are not enough to stop Ebola. Speaking via a video link from Ghana, where the new UN mission is based, Banbury said that if the international effort to get ahead of the virus fails, the response plan they have cannot be scaled to a much larger crisis.
We either stop Ebola now, or we face an entirely unprecedented situation for which we do not have a plan.
He said the World Health Organization estimates there will be 10,000 cases of Ebola each week by December 1st. Banbury said the WHO advises that 70% of infected people must be in a care facility and 70% of burials must be done without causing further infections by that date.
If we reach these targets, then we can turn this epidemic around.
Banbury said many gaps still need to be filled in the Ebola response. In Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone, the three most affected countries where all but a handful of the nearly 9,000 cases have occurred, he said several thousand more treatment beds with trained, paid staff are needed, as well as more diagnostic laboratories, burial teams, protective gear, and vehicles. He also warned that Ebola is spreading most rapidly in urban areas, which will need specialized assistance. A UN volunteer died Tuesday at a hospital in Germany where he was flown for treatment after contracting the disease in Liberia. The Sudanese national was the second UN staffer to die of the disease since September. Despite this death, however, Banbury said large numbers of UN staff are signing up with his Ebola response mission. Separately, U.S. President Barack Obama is urging the international community to do more to fight the deadly virus. Speaking at a military airbase outside Washington, Mr. Obama said there are many countries that can help but have not yet stepped up. He said until everyone does more, Ebola will continue to pose a global public health threat. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
In the past 15 months, more than 30 United Nations peacekeepers have been killed and 90 wounded in attacks in Mali. Katerina Hoye reports from Bamako on what is contributing to the deteriorating security situation as the fledgling government searches for ways to consolidate a fragile peace.
Clashes, deadly attacks, and the return of drug traffickers and jihadists have had a heavy impact on the security situation in northern Mali. And the victims are increasingly the UN peacekeepers, a 10,000-strong force with a mandate to protect civilians since July 2013, when Mali held elections to unite a country fractured by insurgency and a military coup. Community leaders say that armed men have returned to the villages. Haudu Ag Kausane, the mayor of Entilit, a village in the Gao region, was forced to flee when gunmen claiming to be members of the separatist rebel group, the National Movement for the Liberation of Asawad, took control of the village.
Comme je l'ai dit, c'est pas une armée aussi organisée que les MNLA Kidal, par exemple, j'ai dit. Ils ont profité de cette situation de cesser les feux.
He says these men were more like bandits and thieves and are not organized like the MNLA. The mayor says, since there are no soldiers in the village, they are taking advantage of the security vacuum to return. The 2013 French military intervention was successful in pushing back many of the armed groups, which had taken over the northern two-thirds of the country. But as foreign troops draw down, the fledgling government has yet to take political and military control in many areas. Malian Foreign Minister Abdoulaye Diop appealed to the UN Security Council last week to create a rapid reaction force to deal with the returning security threats. UN peacekeeping chief Hervé Ladsous visited Mali last week to assess the situation firsthand.
Mais aussi du retrait, pour l'essentiel, de l'armée malienne, des forces armées maliennes du Nord Mali.
He says the retreat of the Malian army from the north and the situation in southern Libya, where many of the fighters fled after being driven out of the north and where they later regrouped, has contributed to the recent violence. Addressing that it is complicated, he says, because the groups are fragmented, you don't know who's affiliated with who, and at the same time there are some jihadist elements. As French forces have pulled out from some areas in the north, the UN mission MINUSMA is the main international presence on the ground. That makes the UN soldiers a target for armed groups, jihadists and traffickers who are scrambling to control the vast and largely unpopulated area. Latsous says a new international approach may be needed.
Deuxième point, la résolution 2164 du Conseil de sécurité, qui confirme les principes.
He says UN soldiers are no longer in a peacekeeping environment, but in a situation where we have to fight terrorists, which is not part of the capabilities under the current mandate. All this comes as Mali's government continues talks with various stakeholders to unify the country. The government has ruled out any political deals that compromise Mali's territorial integrity or secular status. Katrina Höye for VOA News in Bamako.
It is Wednesday morning, October 15th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. The people of Mozambique are voting today in presidential election, the first time since independence that Frelimo will be challenged at the polls. The country is on an upward trajectory, becoming one of Africa's fastest growing economies, due in part to huge gas reserves. But as Mozambique's long-term ruling party promises to take the nation forward after this election, citizens say they want to see even more economic changes. VOA's Anita Powell visited the bustling May market in Maputo to talk to voters about their priorities.
Mozambique's relaxed capital was shaken 4 years ago when residents rioted for 3 days over the rising costs of bread, electricity, and gasoline. This was the scorched aftermath. In all, 13 people died. Since then, the government has responded by upping domestic food production and instituting some price controls. The nation also got an economic boost with the recent discovery of massive gas deposits. So in this election season, Mozambique's government and its critics are keenly aware that popular support hinges on one thing, the economy. This is clear at Maputo's central market, wallpapered with political election posters. Many voters here say the economy is their top priority.
We have a lot of people without job, without work. So we need a special thing. We need the government. We need change.
Potato seller Constantino Basilio Manis says he can literally count how he's benefited from the government's economic policies.
The government has enabled us to have more farming plots, which allows us to have more local products. So we don't have to get products from South Africa because we have our own products.
His colleague in the fish market agrees that things are better, but wants the government now to improve infrastructure.
I'm happy at the moment because prices are not going up. They've been holding steady.
But not everyone is prospering. The largest trade union says unemployment stands around 23%. That has prompted some Mozambicans to swear off the longtime ruling party, Frelimo, which has handed the mantle of power from outgoing President Armando Guebuza to the relatively obscure defense minister, Felipe Nyusi. Many say they prefer the populist rhetoric of longtime opposition leader Alfonso Dhlakama, who leans further left and has drawn huge campaign crowds. Mozambique has walked a long road since this leader, Samora Machel, brought the nation out from under Portuguese colonial rule. Citizens say many things have improved and opened up in the last 2 decades. But they say 20 years is a long time for many Mozambicans to wait to benefit from an economy full of promise. Anita Powell, VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
Tens of thousands of South Sudanese who fled to a UN base to escape violence in Unity State are now facing another enemy, rising floodwaters. VOA East Africa correspondent Gabe Jaslow has this exclusive report from the Bentiu Protection Site, where aid workers are scrambling to help a population with nowhere else to turn.
Life for displaced people at the Bentiu Protection Site is a daily battle against the rising waters. Outside one flooded home, a family tries to rebuild a small mud dam, the only thing separating them from the murky lake that surrounds them. Mitarisa, a mother of eight, says they do not even have enough dry space to build a fire. Inside their home, the floor is made of a wet, sticky mud. The family takes turns sleeping in two beds.
Sometimes we go without anything to eat. The place is filled with water and the children cry from standing up all day with no place to sit down.
A soggy marshland, This UN peacekeepers base was never meant for so many people. But today, 47,000 have crammed in to escape violence outside. Mostly from the Nuer tribe, they fled fighting between the mostly Nuer armed opposition and Dinka government forces, which now control the city. Many are still too afraid to leave. At least here, there are markets and a sense of community. But living knee-deep in this polluted water makes this existence unsustainable.
Yeah, a lot of cases happen, like skin diseases. People are, you can say, I feel itching in my body, so you don't sleep well. Skin diseases, diarrhea, water diarrhea, so because all latrines flooded. And if the latrines are flooded, they all goes into the household.
The flooding hasn't just destroyed homes, it has also taken out schools and blocked access to health facilities. So the agencies that were providing those services in the camp have now switched their focus to one priority, drainage. International NGOs have been working daily to pump water from flooded areas into the marshland outside the camp as excavators build mud dams to keep the water from washing back in. The head of the Unity State Field Office for the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, says it could take weeks before this protection site, or POC as it is called, is dry. Anga Razafi says creating the conditions for people to leave is the only long-term solution.
The biggest need right now, if I may say, is peace. To move those people out of this POC. They're not to be here, but there's no other conditions outside for them.
While the rainy season is expected to come to an end soon, military officials expect fighting to escalate in coming months, which could put more pressure on people who've already had about all they can take. Gabe Joselo, VOA News, Bentiu, South Sudan.
Religion plays an important role in public life across Ghana. For some, the role is too public. In the suburbs of the capital, Accra, neighbors and local lawmakers say disorderly all-night church services have become too noisy to tolerate. Chris Stein reports from Pokuasi, Ghana.
Blaring organs, tambourines, and voices raised in song. The sounds of charismatic evangelical Christian churches are common in Ghana's towns and cities. The music is most often heard on Sunday mornings, but many churches hold services several times during the week. Some say it's too much. Districts on the outskirts of Accra are cracking down on noisy churches. Sam Atukwe-Kwe, municipal chief executive in the Ga West District, says it's a matter of balancing religion with peace and quiet.
So literally, people would want to shout and they would want to make noise and make joy loudly, thinking that they are praising their God. And in so doing, trample upon other people's right to live in a serene environment.
Over the past year, the authorities in Ga West have gone to court to seek fines or sanctions against between 10 and 15 churches, Kwe says. Many other churches in the district have received warnings about their noise level or reached an out-of-court settlement with the district to avoid prosecution. At the Jewels of God Church in the town of Pokuasi, Church Secretary Vincent Ocheri says complaints from irate neighbors forced them to tone down the music and preaching at their all-night prayer services. Ocheri says music is used at those services both to encourage people to pray and to keep them from falling asleep in the wee hours.
Sometimes the people living around, they normally tend to complain, so like when we are having all nights and all that, sometimes we are having a church service in the evening and they begin to complain. I've had the opportunity to meet one of those living around. I had a meeting with one of them trying to explain things to them, and they actually we were able to solve things out.
A 2012 survey ranked Ghana as among the world's most religious countries. Everyone but a small minority either attends a church or mosque or practices a traditional religion. Emmanuel Kumi attends an evangelical church. While churches must be respected, he says, pastors must know their limits.
I can say that I will not back anybody who is against the church. But the church too, to understand that the people around them too, they should be able to maintain how they will manage the noise to be able to make the people happy around them so that they will all live peaceable.
With hundreds, if not thousands, of churches spread across the sprawling city, the noise-conscious neighborhoods have their work cut out for them. Chris Stein for VOA News, Pokuasi.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Olma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on football. Ivory Coast beat hosts Namibia 3-1, while Nigeria went on the rampage, thrashing Zambia 6-0 in Group A action at the Telecom Namibia Mobile Africa Women's Championships at the Sam Nujoma Stadium in Katutura Township, Windhoek, on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday, action shifts to Group B, where Cameroon face Algeria before Ghana encounter South Africa. Meanwhile, the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations group qualifiers reach the halfway stage today, Wednesday, with Algeria, Cameroon and South Africa hosting opponents where victory could place them among the first to qualify for the tournament. The Algerians host Malawi in Blida, Cameroon tackle Sierra Leone in Yaounde, while South Africa engage the Republic of Congo in Polokwane. At the other end of the contest, African champions Nigeria and six-time African champions Egypt must win their matches at home against Sudan in Abuja and Botswana in Cairo, respectively, to keep hope alive of qualifying for the 2015 Nations Cup. Elsewhere, Togo host Uganda, Tunisia play Senegal, Burkina Faso engage Gabon, Mali encounter Ethiopia, Zambia tackle Niger, Angola meet Lesotho, Ivory Coast engage the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ghana host Guinea, and Cape Verde Islands engage Mozambique. Meanwhile, the South Africa Football Association recently honored former South African heads of state for their contribution to the growth of football as an avenue to enhance social cohesion. Former President Thabo Mbeki emphasizes that South Africa's staging of the 2010 FIFA World Cup was significant for Africa.
But I think that it was important also the decision that was taken, led by Sepp Blatter, that the World Cup should rotate among the various regions. Now, you never knew whether the political decisions wouldn't always disqualify Africa. So when it was said, we let it move around the regions, we thought it was an important decision that we wanted to host not a South African World Cup, but an African World Cup.
That was Thabo Mbeki, former South African head of state, speaking in Johannesburg, South Africa. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, October 15th.
I wish to commend President Paul Biya of Cameroon for his successful efforts in recovering the Vice Prime Minister's wife, along with those kidnapped by Boko Haram. I urge the Nigeria government to do the same and bring back the Chibok girls. I am Prince John Ishir Obaneku in Ogbodukadi Ranch, Kwara State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The head of the UN Ebola mission in West Africa says he is deeply, deeply worried that everything being done to fight the outbreak is not enough to stop it. Anthony Barbery told the Security Council from Ghana on Tuesday that Ebola has a head start in the race against the disease. He says Ebola has to be stopped now or the world faces an unprecedented crisis. Meanwhile, the head of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says any U.S. hospital with a confirmed case of Ebola now will get a CDC response team on the ground within hours. That's it for this Wednesday, October 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, I'm James Butte in Washington saying have a nice day, Africa.
What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America. Hot, hot!
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks, get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah. Now there's a youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I feel like the problem is that once the funds are sent to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.